Hello, you are tuned into another episode of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program, each and every week, I like to find and feature themes relating to Appalachian culture and folk life, and then play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Well, today I am featuring a program about the Historical Society of Washington County, which is located right up the road from Bristol in Abingdon, Virginia. Since its founding in 1936, the society has grown from a small collection housed in a founder's home into one of the finest small historical and genealogical research facilities in Virginia. I'll be speaking with my guest, president of the Washington County Historical Society, Walter Jenny Jr., all about the mission of the society and more, including a little about the ongoing story of moving the historic Hiram Dooley House across the street in Abingdon early last year. So please stick around and stay tuned with me here this hour on Mountain Song and Story. I'm so excited that you are joining me, and we're going to get to that conversation with Walter here in just a bit. First up, we're going to get into some Virginia tunes today. Kicking things off, we got Jerry Lee Lewis, Carry Me Back to Old Virginia.
One, two, three, four.
Home on the hill. I'm going back to the old home, back
place loves the willow, where the sweet waters flow and the wildflowers grow. Back to the old home on the hill. Years have gone by since I saw her. I've traveled many a mile, but tonight there's a light in the window, and she's waiting at the door with a smile. I'm going back to the old home, back to the place loving well, where the sweet waters flow and the wildflowers grow. Back to the old home on the hill.
Couple of Virginia boys themselves, the Stanley Brothers, with The Old Home. Before that, kicking things off for the show today, Jerry Lee Lewis with Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. All right, folks, I'm so excited for today's program. I can't thank you enough for tuning in to hang out with me. We're going to be talking to Walter Jenny Jr. from the Historical Society of Washington County up the road in Virginia, all about what they do, upcoming programs, how you can get involved, and so much more. You know, it's just so important to have institutions like this in our local communities so we can continue to preserve and promote all of the great history and culture that goes on here in Southwest Virginia and beyond. So I'm excited to get to speak to Walter today about some things that they are doing. So we're going to go ahead and get on into this conversation with Walter Jenny Jr., president of the Historical Society of Washington County, here in just a second. And please stick around and stay tuned with me all this hour. We got a great show. So yeah, hang out with me and stick around. Okay, so joining me now is Walter Jenny Jr. He is the president of the Historical Society of Washington County, Virginia, which is located in downtown Abingdon. Their vision is to be an educational resource and community leader committed to collecting, preserving, and sharing the records of people, places, and events so that future generations may find common interest and knowledge in the unique heritage of our county and surrounding region. So welcome, Walter. It's so great to have you on this show today. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you about the Historical Society.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so let's start by telling our listeners and folks about the Historical Society. How long have you been involved? So you're the president. So what are your duties? And really, what is the Historical Society of Washington County? What do you all do?
The Historical Society was founded in 1936 by local residents who wanted to preserve the history of Washington County. Washington County originally, when it was formed in 1776, covered not just what it covers now, but all of Southwest Virginia. And so a lot of people who came through Washington County on their way west either settled here, stopped here, generated business here, lived here for a while, died and were buried here. There are lots of connections with hundreds of thousands of people who passed through here on their way west. So the society was created to help preserve as much of that history as possible. And it started with the support of the Blacks Fort chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. They were the driving force behind it. Over the years, it moved from someone's closet in their home to a room at the courthouse, to the Norfolk and Western Depot. And now, about 4 years ago, we acquired a building at Main and Russell Road, and that's where we're located now.
Yeah. So how many members do y'all have? Because you were really active on the social media sites as well. There's you're always making posts about the growing membership. And I know it's like we're growing membership, but also pay your dues.
Well, and we have an official roster of members. They pay $35 a year in dues for individuals, or businesses can pay $50 a year to be a dues paid member. And we have between 450 and 500 dues paid members. And those are loyal people from not just Abingdon or Washington County, but all over the country. I've seen some in Washington State and California. And they help pay the bills. They help support the organization. You were referring to our Facebook group, which has almost 8,000 members of that page. And it's really phenomenal. I started tracking it just about the time COVID hit, so maybe 2 years ago. And the membership at that time was about 4,000. So we've almost doubled the Facebook group membership in 24 months. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I always see the climbing numbers and I'm like, that's really impressive that so many people are interested. So what's one thing that you all do? What are like the community resources that this historical society has and really others, but specifically you all, what can people dig up and learn through the resources that you all provide?
In our library, we have over 7,000 books, and there are a wide range of books from family books that have been put together and published to treatises on the Civil War or the American Revolution, Kings Mountain. There's just a long range of descriptions of the kinds of books that we have on the shelves. We also have a computer presence. We have an in-house database with a large number of images, photographs, documents that have been scanned. And of all of that, we have an indexing system with almost 1.3 million items of indexing. So if you want to put in the name Doman and find out how many Domans lived here or are mentioned in any of our books or any of our images, it'll pop right up and you can easily identify those. Most of those records are not online. Most of those records are in-house only. So we can preserve them and make sure that we don't get hacked or anything like that. So we have that database internally that we maintain.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So like anybody can pretty much come to you all, and if they're doing research or just family history, genealogy, like the Historical Society is the access point to uncover that information.
Exactly. There was one house that was being remodeled, and the new owner of the house asked if we had any old photographs of what the front of the house looked like, because it struck him that it looked like it had a different front porch. So we did some research and pulled up some photographs from over 100 years ago of that building that gave him a clear idea of what the building looked like a century ago. And that answered his question. So, yeah, we have people coming in doing research for a large number of reasons.
Yeah. So what's really the main purpose? You kind of answered this already, but just for our listeners, what's the main purpose of historical societies, and not just this community, but others? And why are they so important for just a local community, especially here in Appalachia, for sure?
There's an old phrase about history repeating itself. And if you don't know your history, it's liable to repeat itself in ways that are not welcome. So it's important for people to be able to understand what our ancestors went through, what the people living in our community went through, why roads are where they are, why buildings are where they are, why churches are where they are. So you can understand the thought process, the issues that people went through in making those decisions. But also your ancestors. Why did your ancestors come through here? What did they do when they were here? Did they stop and operate a business? Or did they stop to bury someone? And then why did they move on? Of course, a lot of people stayed here, but the vast majority of people who came through here were moving further west.
And Abingdon especially is such an old historic town that there is so much history there, living history still with the buildings and just what you were saying with the roadways. I'm wondering, do y'all have like an oldest artifact or oldest like photograph that you know of? What's the oldest thing that y'all have at the Historical Society and in your archives and collections?
That I don't know. I'd have to do some digging to find what that was. I don't know. There is a belief that we have the dirk or dagger that belonged to Reverend Charles Cummings, that he would have taken with him when he traveled around. We don't know for sure the provenance of that. It's very possible that that is a relic from the 18th century.
Wow, yeah. So what are some of the events and activities that you all provide to the community? Like I said a bit ago, you all are really active from the Living Cemetery historical tours, which I'm still going to take part in that one day whenever I have availability. But that's a really great thing. And I always see the things that you all are doing online. What are your like pre-pandemic normal activities that y'all usually do?
The Spirits of Sinking Spring is a major event of ours. We've been doing that about 10 years, and we will do it again in July as part of the Virginia Highlands Festival. And basically, that's an opportunity for some of us to portray some of the people who are buried or have a connection with Sinking Spring Cemetery. We do our amateur part to try to tell their stories. Some of us will dress up in period attire, and we will tell what we have learned about that person, Reverend Charles Cummings, for example, or Governor Floyd, who's buried there, Governor Campbell. There are lots of stories buried there. And there's an old saying about gone but not forgotten. Well, a lot of people have forgotten the stories about those people. So we try to bring those stories back to life.
So just wondering, so I've talked to another active Abingdon living history interpreter, Michael Henningsen. And I know he's very active and he's been on this program here before talking about some of his characters that he's researched, or not characters, real people rather. But how do you go about, like, if I was to just, you're putting on this event and I'm going to research this person, where would you even start to kind of dig through this information to see that this was a notable person here in this area and they're buried in Sinking Spring Cemetery and I want to research them? Like, that's just a really interesting thing to me. How does that all get started?
One way it starts is to simply walk through the cemetery. It dates back to the 1770s. It was originally the churchyard of the Sinking Spring Presbyterian Church, which was the first established church on this side of the Blue Ridge, on the frontier. So that church had a lot of history, and many of the parishioners of that church are buried there. So if you simply walk through the cemetery, you'll see headstones that are remarkable. There's one collection of four children who are buried next to each other with identical graves. So that sparks a curiosity about what happened to those four children, who their family members were, and why they are there. You'll see the headstones of governors and of generals. You'll see the headstones of husband and wife, or maybe just the wife and not the husband. And so it's very easy to say, well, I wonder what the story is behind that person. Why are they here? Then you can come into the Historical Society and run a search for them. There may be records on them. It could be a family history that somebody has written. It could be an obituary. It could be a story about a house that they lived in. Another way of getting involved in it is if you have a personal connection there. After we moved here, my wife found out that her fifth great grandmother is buried in Sinking Spring Cemetery. She did not know that. When we moved here, she didn't even know this person existed. But as she was doing her genealogical research, she came across the name, found the headstone at Sinking Spring Cemetery. And as a result, she has done some more research on who she was and why she's there. As it turned out, the family lived here. She died. The husband took, you know, some of the kids were already grown up. So the husband and the rest of the family moved on to Strawberry Plain, Tennessee. And so we were able to track that down and go find where that fifth great grandfather was married. So she enjoys telling that story. She enjoys portraying that ancestor. So there are a number of different ways of finding out and getting involved in that program.
Yeah, and just hearing about that, it already has me interested in trying to dig up, you know, your own family history. So it's very inspiring, and I hope that it certainly is inspiring for anyone's curiosity as well to learn about their own heritage. So I think that's fantastic, and that's a great story that she was able to find that relative. So is the person that does she portray a relative, that relative, or a similar, a related relative for the cemetery tours?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's really neat.
Yeah.
So what's one of the most interesting things about what you do, and why are you so passionate about history? I think I have a few guesses just hearing you talk, but what's some of the most interesting things that you do as being part of the Historical Society?
Well, it's easy to get involved in the meetings. You know, we have bi-monthly board meetings, and then we've got committee meetings. Then you meet with different volunteers who are working on different projects. And that's the mundane part about it. But what really is a pleasure is getting to know people who have an interest in what's going on in the county and in the community, who have a connection and a hunger for information about something in particular. A good example of something we went through is something that you and I worked on together, and that's the Hiram Dooley House. I didn't know you before that, but you got involved in that project once it started hitting the headlines, and you took it and ran with it, and you did a remarkable job with that by helping generating knowledge about what was going on, but also helping bring the community together. I don't remember how many signatures wound up being on the change.org petition, but I know there were thousands, and that all comes back to you. But to see somebody like you who's new to what's going on to take it and run with it and develop it into something that is that has a significant impact on the community, that just does wonders for me.
Yeah, and that's a great transition into the next thing I was going to ask you, was talking about that story about how I met you and the Hiram Dooley House in Abingdon. So for our listeners who don't know, the Hiram Dooley House is a structure in Abingdon, Virginia, that was slated for demolition back in, I believe, early 20, 2020? Has that been that long?
2021.
21, right. So just last year, slated for demolition. I actually saw that notice from I think it was a news article from the Bristol newspaper, and was really upset because this is a historic building. It's, you know, historic buildings are one of the main reasons that people want to come to towns like Abingdon and how they can promote tourism. And when you take those structures out of a beautiful, like quaint old town like Abingdon, it just further takes away from the charm and so many reasons. So it immediately struck a chord with me, and I interjected myself into this story and started a petition on change.org, which is a free site. Anybody can get these petitions up and going, and just generated a lot of online stir about it, which got a lot of people involved, and a lot of people signed the petition asking to not demolish the building. So luckily, over the course of some time, some funders got involved, and we were able to successfully move the house about, what, 300 yards? Not even 300 yards-ish, just to the next street over from its original location. And it's a really great story. So I just moved to Bristol recently, and but I used to walk downtown Abingdon all the time. And when that house moved, it was a great day, I got to say. A lot of people came out to witness it. And it's just an amazing thing to see, you know, just being involved and seeing it come, like with a successful outcome, you know, is great. So I was hoping that you could touch a little bit on the history of that house while we're talking about it. Yeah.
Hiram Dooley built that house in 1849. He was a carpenter, a chair builder, a painter who had lived in Abingdon since the 1820s. That's about when we had the first record of him. The property, though, has a deeper history in Abingdon. William King, everyone knows that name, became the richest man in Abingdon before he died at age 39. He and his brother-in-law, Connolly Finley, bought up a lot of the tracts of land on the south side of Main Street, what is now Main Street of Abingdon, because they knew the importance of that stretch of town, that area of town. And Connolly Finley built his tannery there. He had stables there. So all of the people who were coming through the Wilderness Road on their way west would stop and do business there, get their horses taken care of or fed or reshod or whatever needed to be done. So they captured part of that market. He also built his house, which was a 2,400 square foot log home, two stories. If you think about it, that's a huge house. And that was partially because the Finleys and Kings had so much money. But they built that house, and we believe it was probably built where the Dooley house stood. There were some other buildings on the property. There are records of at least one other dwelling place. And I suspect by the time the Dooleys came into the picture and bought the land from the Findlay family, the log cabin was probably getting up in years. You know, it was 30 or 40 years old, if not older. We think the log cabin was built in 1797. So I suspect that the Dooley family with their children moved into, well, the children came later, but they moved into one of the dwelling houses and stayed there until they got established enough. They probably built the new home on the site of the Findlay log cabin, which is right on Pecan Street. And the reason that's such an important location is because Pecan was the main business road in Abingdon at that early time. Like I said, Connolly Finley had his operations there. William King had money invested there. Governor David Campbell built his house eventually just south of there at Montcalm. You had water there, the creek. It was shouting distance from where Black's Fort was. This was the heart and soul of Abingdon at the time. So not only was the log cabin there, but Dooley built his house there. And they raised their children there. They didn't stay there for very long because they lost a daughter at age 20. And his wife died not too long after that. They had a son, Aaron Dooley, who was killed during the Civil War in the Battle of the Wilderness. So there was a lot of tragedy in the family shortly after that. But Hiram Dooley remained in Abingdon and the area until the 1870s and 1880s.
Yeah, and there, I remember you also mentioning when we were getting involved with this house moving project, which to see it up close and actually happening, it's a very slow process. You know, they actually bring these jacks up and there's a whole company who moves these structures. So I remember you talking a little bit about enslaved people. They were instrumental in building this structure. And I think that that's really important when we're talking about the history of Appalachia, because a lot of the times there might be people that's left out of a lot of discussions and records. And that's a great point that enslaved people built this structure, helped.
Yeah, keep in mind that in 1849, slavery was still going strong. You usually don't think of Washington County as being a place where there were a lot of slaves. But there were slaves here. I think in 1870, about 17% of the population of the county was African American, either Black or had been either enslaved or a free person of color. So there were a good number of African Americans here, and they provided the manual labor. So when you say Hiram Dooley built his house, you're probably seeing African Americans making the bricks and African Americans digging the foundation and doing the hard work for the white people. And it's, you often overlook the fact that those laborers were making it possible to build a town like Abingdon. Mm-hmm.
So what do you see the, now that we're talking about the structure and its incredible journey, 300 yards across the street, really. What is the future of this? You know, we saved a historic home. It feels great, I gotta say. What's the current future of what's going to happen or what's slated to happen or planned to the building?
David and Jill Dalton paid for the property to be moved. They had the vacant lot just by sheer coincidence at that location. They have a few other real estate properties in the area. Jill is the sister of Rick Humphreys, who has other lodging facilities in the area. And of course, Rick and his wife, Susan, have been very active in the community. Lois Humphreys, Rick's and Jill's mother, was a former mayor of Abingdon. So the Humphreys have a very strong imprint on the community. So David and Jill bought the property, moved it on the land that they owned. My understanding is they're going to continue renovating it and turn it into an additional lodging property. And of course, it'll be a very significant property for people who are on the trail or just visiting Abingdon for whatever reason to be able to stay there either short or long term. But whatever the Daltons do with it, it's going to be first class, and it's really going to be another asset for the community.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so exciting to be able to see it come together and see it be saved. And I'm so glad that I'm not driving past there on a regular basis and seeing a vacant lot, but the house has been moved, so it's pretty great.
The nice thing about it is, although the house stood out on Pecan Street because it was pretty much by itself, it really fits into Park Street for a number of reasons. It is in with other buildings, other houses, and so it's it stands proudly on Park Street compared to the neighboring houses. It really stands out. I've learned fairly recently that Hiram Dooley was actually hired by the town of Abington to take charge of Park Street being paved and widened and improved while he was living. And I don't remember where that was, whether it was 1850s or exactly when, but it's just sheer coincidence that the Dooley house now stands on Park Street that Hiram Dooley had something to do with improving it and making it a better street in the town.
The Carter family there with East Virginia Blues, sticking to our Virginia song theme for today's program. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. Today, I am speaking with Walter Jenny Jr. from the Washington County Historical Society over in Abingdon, Virginia, all about what the Historical Society does, a little bit about the story you just heard about the moving the Hiram Dooley house back in 2021 is when we got that literally rolling. So we're going to go ahead and get back on into our conversation with Walter.
Do you think that it's obviously, since we're talking about restoring and or saving historic homes, I see a lot of home restoration projects, especially just because we have the internet and we're so connected and can see what's happening across so many communities all across the country. It seems that there is often challenges, obviously, with restoring or saving these historic structures. But again, there's a great importance and a great reason to do so. Are there any other like challenges that you all have experienced or that you know of you've experienced through like just the historic restoration efforts of these like historic homes, especially?
Well, there are other people who have more experience at actually renovating houses that are very old houses like that. There are lots of issues that come into play from the foundation to the roof, to the electrical and heat and air that didn't exist prior to the Civil War. The size, the number of rooms, the lack of closets that people are used to today. So, yeah, there are a lot of issues. Sometimes the brick was constructed by letting it air dry, which means it's not going to last as long as a kiln-fired brick. So sometimes you find a beautiful house that's made out of brick that's disintegrating into dust, and it's very difficult to figure out a way to preserve that beautiful building when it's literally crumbling. So, yeah, there are lots of issues that come into play.
Yeah. You know, I was recently in Savannah last fall, and I had never been there before, and it is such a historic town that's so well preserved, you know, and it really does feel like it takes a village to be able to have these spaces and preserve them for the future, for right now. I mean, you have so many of these new home constructions coming up that are just, in my opinion, just so boring and ugly. Like, but historic homes just have that beauty and charm, and it just makes, you know, more of the downtown areas that are all across the country just beautiful and makes them so unique, you know? So I'm really passionate about that.
There's an old song from the 1960s about little boxes, they're all made out of ticky tack and they all look the same. And that's very true in a lot of newer neighborhoods. But when you have a house like Montcalm, like some of the other either plantation or farmhouses around Washington County that stand tall and have remarkable stories behind them, it's something you want to preserve if at all possible. There are some of the older houses like Panicello, which was the Johnston family home, basically behind where the Abingdon High School is now. You can take the trail and go up and see where the house stood. You can see the cemetery where some of the Johnston family members are buried. They have a deep imprint on the community from the 18th and 19th centuries. But a family came along and dismantled that log home and moved it to North Carolina, where it's been reconstructed and is part of their home in the mountains in North Carolina now. So basically, they robbed Abingdon of the potential to keep that historical structure here. And it'll never be reconstructed here. You'll never see it again here. So the buildings that are here, if we don't have a community attentiveness to what's going on, then there's a high risk of losing those buildings. The church that owned the land where the Hiram Dooley House is, that congregation had torn down two other houses on Main Street in order to build a parking lot. So this was literally the third house over the decades that they were looking at demolishing so they could have more elbow room to have a bigger imprint in downtown. So the response from the community was obvious that the community wasn't happy with this. They wanted to preserve what some people call the dilapidated old house. Well, it's not dilapidated anymore, and it's going to shine, and that's because people cared.
Yeah, I had no idea about the house, the first house in Abingdon, the Panicello. Is that
yes.
Right? I've been up there a lot, and I had no idea that was dismantled and put in North Carolina. That's, wow. I know that there's a Boy Scout troop that did a project where they, you know,
measured out.
Yeah. So, wow, that's really interesting. And it just makes you wonder how many other structures are no longer standing, and not just in Southwest Virginia and in Abingdon, but all across the U.S. I think about that a lot because you have places like Europe who they've got buildings, they've got castles that are thousands of years old. And here in the United States, we look at a 200-year-old structure and think, wow, it's amazing that it's still here. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So we are about out of time, but before we go, Walter, do you all have any upcoming activities or events through the Historical Society? And where can people go to learn more about what you all are doing and where they can keep up?
Well, we do have a website, HSWCV, which stands for Historical Society of Washington County, Virginia.com. So we have the database for our computer system and also news about what we're doing. The Facebook group is obviously a good site to get information about projects. We do have a lot of projects going on. I just confirmed this week that Thomas Jefferson will be returning to Washington County, and we are still working out the details of exactly when and where, but we have had Bill Barker, who portrays Thomas Jefferson at Monticello, here twice before, and he wants to come back. He has enjoyed his visits here. 2 years ago, he not only did the program with Patrick Henry, the individual who portrays Patrick Henry at Williamsburg, but they also visited 900 school children on that day while they were here.
Wow.
So that's the kind of outreach that we like to do, and we'll be doing that again. There's obviously the cemetery tour that we've talked about before. Last June, we had what's called Reclaiming Our History, which was an African-American project, the first of its kind. We have figured out a way to use Ancestry.com to help identify the African-Americans who lived in Washington County prior to emancipation and help track their descendants. So that will help African-Americans who have a heritage out of Washington County to be able to come and do research here and find the stories about their ancestors. We had, I think, over 65 people who participated in that virtual conference. We're expecting to be able to do that again this coming June and continue expanding the outreach of that. And it's not just tracking those individuals and their descendants, but it's also helping other historical societies learn a way of tracking their African-American ancestors in their communities so they can do the same thing. We will have another cemetery event in October. We did this for the first time. Well, we've done it a couple of times now, and it is more of a sit-down event rather than taking a tour through the cemetery. We use the front porch of the Cummings cabin to come out and tell their stories to the people seated in front of the cabin. And that's an evening event. So we've had good response to that as well as the cemetery tour. And we expect to continue expanding that. So yeah, there are a lot of things that we're working on and hopefully expanding and doing more things in the future.
That's all wonderful. And I will have links to the Facebook page, the Facebook group, and the website, the Historical Society of Washington County website, on the Mountain Song and Story blog page after today's program. Walter, thank you again so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it and value all that you all are doing for Abingdon, the Tri-Cities, and the greater region. It all ties in together. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And thank you for being involved as well.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's the show today. Remember, you can catch Mountain Song and Story every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past programs if you go visit the Mountain Song and Story blog page, which is found over at listenradiobristol.org. You can check out more about this show and all of the other great shows that we have here on Radio Bristol. There is so many. There's too many to name here in the time I have left, so go check it out. Lots of really, really great stuff. Digging with Big Lon is coming up next. And as always, if you go visit the blog page there, you will find today's playlist, materials from the show up there as well. So go check it out. Learn more about the Washington County Historical Society. I'll also have some info from their website and how to get involved on that blog post today. So go check it out. Once again, special thanks again to my guest, Walter Jenny Jr., for taking the time to speak with me today. I sure do appreciate it. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. I just thank you so much for tuning in to hang out with me, and I will catch you right here next week. Oh, and I almost forgot, I'm going to leave you with one more song. Here you go, taking you out with another Virginia tune, Oh Virginia, from Marty Robbins.
How many roses have faded and died, Virginia? How many tears since I've walked by your side, Virginia? Too many moonlights have come and gone, too many sunups and too many sundowns, too many teardrops and too many roses have died. I'm like I was, sad like the day we parted. I'm just the same, lonely and still broken hearted. Maybe I'm older, but nothing has changed. Love grows no colder, I still feel the same. Life has been empty, but I've learned to live in Virginia. Oh, Virginia, when will I stop loving you? Will it go on forever? Oh, Virginia, when will these dreams that I dream of you stop? Maybe never. How many times when your vision appears, I've tried to hold you and you disappear, and I find the arms that once held you are empty, Virginia. Times have I seen in the sky, Virginia, one lonely dove as it goes flying by, Virginia. I'm like the dove as it flies through the blue, one mate it chooses, and if it should lose, it remains lonely, and that's how I'm living, Virginia. Oh, Virginia, when will I stop loving you? Will it go on forever? Oh, Virginia, when will these dreams that I dream of you stop? Maybe never. How many times when your vision appears, I've tried to hold you and you disappear, and I find the arms that once held you are empty, Virginia.